Welcome to Talking in Stations, a podcast about EVE Online. I am your host, Matterall. Today we're going to talk about markets and empire. We have two great guests for you today, and that's going to be Aerith from Goonswarm and Probag. We'll meet them in just a minute. First, I want to say hello to our long-lost pal, Tiberius Stargazer. How's it going?
Hey, it's going good. I'm gonna lie, watching the old FanFest stream, suffering a lot of old FanFest blues, that's for sure. I'm missing all my buddies.
That's rare for you.
Yeah, first time in 4 years, didn't go. Everybody's having a lot of fun over there by the looks of it, and immediately I'm regretting it, so.
All right, well, just come to Vegas so we can hang out.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah, by the way, those tickets went on sale right after it started, and they flew off the shelf, at least the first two layers did. Now it's up to like $195 per ticket.
Yep, that's right. But Vegas always sells out really, really quickly.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't. Every time I'm there, I'm thinking, why did I come here? But anyway, it's good to have you back on the show. We're going to talk a little bit about FanFest, but really we want to save that for next week when everybody gets home. Instead, for people who are traveling, this is going to be a show that they can listen to without hearing all the same stuff they heard while they were in Iceland. We're going to start with Probag, who is putting together a bank. But before we do that, actually, let's get into introductions. From the financial cabal in Goonswarm, Aerith is with us.
Howdy.
Also with us is unaffiliated Probag Bear, who is a financier of different types of efforts. He's one of the market traders of EVE Online. How are you,
Probag? Yo, yo. That's me.
All right, good. And today we want to talk about Probag has a new effort that he's putting out there. What were some of the things you've done in the past?
Let's see. I guess the first thing I was really well known for was Plexwall. You know, the Plexwall was just taxes are going up. I just figured I would make money out of it. Another thing was I was the first one to figure out that you could set up invisible buy orders in citadels that no one else could see, no one else could compete with, and you could just buy everything on the market. And I gave that secret to someone, and they abused it for about a month and made money off it. And then it got out, and it was patched within a couple of days. Maybe I should have abused that as well, but I didn't feel like it. I didn't want to risk getting banned. And I don't know. What else have I done?
So did you leak it to your friend as a canary in the coal mine to throw him out there first?
Exactly. That was exactly it. And I was really surprised, because a month later, he still wasn't banned. And then, you know, it got out, someone made a forum thread about it, and it was patched the next morning, and the guy still didn't get banned. So I don't know. He made money off it.
When you take financial advice from these guys, it's not for free. But anyway, so this new thing that you have going, what's this called, and tell us about it?
Okay, so someone suggested I call it the Pro Bank. So I guess that's called now the Pro Bank. First off, yeah. I don't have a lot of time for EVE right now. I'm stepping away from a couple of things I'm doing in EVE, and I have a lot of cash left over. And first off, I just want to lend it out to people, because if it's just sitting in my wallet, it's not making any money. But if I give it to someone and they give me 2% interest a month, then, you know, when I come back later this year or whenever, I'll have more money. Second off, I really want to try to get some kind of a futures market going in EVE. And basically, quick intro, quick explanation. A futures contract is when you say that, let's say, if some date in the future, let's say August 1st, I'm going to buy a certain quantity of something for a certain price. For example, let's say I give you a promise that on August 1st, I'm going to buy 1,000 Plex for $4. And, you know, that promise in the real world, it's a piece of paper that you can sell and buy and trade, and that, you know, gains value, drops value. If Plex goes up in value, then obviously my offer to buy your Plex at an inflated price is worth less. So piece of paper goes down in value. And I just think it would be a really nice thing to have in EVE as an option for, you know, those people in the market discussions forum who have money and who invest money and want extra options, because it allows you to invest in things without having to put all your money down. You know, usually if you want to bet on the price of Plex rising, you actually have to buy Plex. But if there's a futures market going and it's healthy, you don't actually have to buy Plex. You just put, let's say, 20% down, and you still get the full benefits or drawbacks, whichever one it is. You can win money, you can lose money, but you can do it on a bigger scale. if you have some kind of futures market going. So yeah, that's the basics. The quick intro. Mm-hmm. But so no, go ahead.
In a way, this is kind of crowdsourcing investors, right? To let them do the find the deals and do the stuff. And I guess that's what banks are. And then you make money off them do it instead of you having to put in all the work.
Honestly, the first part, the way I described it to you is I can lend, say, 500 bill to someone like Liz Norn, and they can give me 2% a month. Or if I put in a bit of extra effort, I can make a thread, I can talk to people, and I can get like 50 small timers who only need 10 bill each. And the smaller the loan, the more interest they're going to get. If I lend out 10 bill to someone, I'm going to get 4% a month. If I lend out 50 times 10 bill, I'm going to get 4% all of them, which is double of what I would get if I just lend it out in one single go. That's the idea behind it. And, you know, if I see someone has a nice loan somewhere and someone's already filled it, I offer to buy it off him. Like, for example, there's a guy, Nightfox, right now on the market discussions forum, who's offering 7%. And I got in late and he pretty much had all the money he needed. So I just bought his loan from the other people who invested.
So now you bought them all out.
I bought one of them out. I'm going to try to buy the other ones out as well because I trust the guy. And when he says he's going to give back 7%, I don't know. I've worked with a guy in the past. I believe him. I think it's a good investment.
Well, that seems to be the big question. It's like, this isn't real life. They're not lawyers involved. There's no contracts that mean anything in Eve because people can really just walk away, create a new character. So how are you going to like make sure you get your money back?
All right, so on the first part, just the loaning money to other people. That's the reason why most loans in Eve are collateralized, where if you want to borrow 50 bill, you have to put 50 bill down, whether that's a Titan or, you know, 50,000 Plex, however much Plex is worth right now, you have to put something down for it. You give it to a third party or you give it to a person you're borrowing money from. And then at the end, when you're ready to give money back, you trade back, get the collateral back. You know, that's really useful if you've got stuff like assets stuck in NullSec somewhere that are technically retrievable, but you don't feel like getting them out. Or if you're making an investment, if you buy a bunch of TRIT because you think it's going to go up, but then you have no money left over, and you're like, okay, if anyone wants to give me a loan, I'll give you a billion TRIT in exchange for a loan. And if I default, you get to keep a billion TRIT. And yeah, that's how most loans work in Eve. Other than that, it is just entirely the trust system. Like this guy, Nightfox, it's actually the reason he's giving so much interest, 7%, is because it's completely uncollateralized. He's not putting anything down for it. So it's just up to me to trust him and up to him not to scam me.
And you see, that's a really important point as well, because whenever you talk about big financial schemes within Eve, there's probably two really big examples that come to mind. There's the old ISK Titans for you and the Phaser Inc. Scan things where eventually people just got ripped off on it. Like how do you build trust in a community to do these sort of transactions with them, especially when there's been such a history of these things happening in the past and going sideways?
So this community pretty much is takes place in the market discussion subforum of the EVE Online official forums. Also, there's a couple of Discord channels, but basically it's smallish community, like 100 people tops maybe. Most of those people know each other, and to build up trust, it's pretty much just a grind. It's just a rep grind. You start out small, you take out a few loans, you make a name for yourself as someone reliable, someone that actually makes money, someone that's worth investing in, and then people start trusting you more. And let me use Liz Norn as an example really quickly. He started contributing in that community, I don't know, 3 years ago or something. And then people started using him as a third party because Treba, how do you pronounce Treba's name? Treba is not always available. And even when Treba? He is, he's not in that community. So Liz Norn became the third party for that community. People would give him collateral. He would pretty much do the same thing as Treba. And then not that long ago, what was it, 5 months ago, he took out a loan for $1 trillion ISK, completely uncollateralized, completely based on trust.
Wow.
He didn't put anything down for it because people trusted him and he's paying it off. He's already paid off half of it. He could pay off another half tomorrow if he wasn't so lazy.
So there's a reputation grind among the financial community for you guys.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, reputation grind is a phrase that those people don't like very much because it sounds like you're trying to scam them. But fuck it, I'm going to use it. So
you're going to use the term. You're not going to use
I'm
going to
use
scam
the term.
Them.
I'm just not going to scam them. Yeah.
What kind of reputation does Aerith have in that community?
I don't know. I don't think Aerith participates in that community. I think he has enough private investors that he doesn't need to participate in a community like that.
Yeah, I would never participate in a pubby community, first of all. Second of all, like, I lead our community. So when it comes to financials, like, I have a channel we call GSISC where I give directions to everyone. And I have one hard rule that I teach everyone that comes in that channel. I've had to teach it a lot lately, which is those that ask for your money don't deserve it. And those that deserve your money will never ask for it or want it. And we abide by that. So we always tell people, your money should never leave your hands. I'll just tell you what to do with it.
Your model is very interesting. We'll get to it because we're going to talk about Goonswarm and their finance.
I really like that model. The problem why it can't work in a public community is, you know, obviously, if you tell people, do this with your money, they're going to tell other people. Like back when I made the Plex wall, if I had just told people, hey, this is how you multiply your money, then I would have lost out on my opportunity. And, you know, I kind of envy you, Aerith, because that model works great in a close community like Goonswarm, but that's not something I have access to right now, and that's not something I'm interested in gaining access to, so I'm stuck just trusting people.
Yeah, so we've had a robust loan kind of community for at least 10 years. Like, you see the smaller players that will do loans, and it's a very, very good return rate because they're sacrificing their membership of the collective to do it, right? And generally, you wouldn't loan anyone that just joined or whatever, but that's been really robust and well taken care of, except they have their membership on the line. That's the distinction between us and other communities is there's actually something on the line as collateral.
Well, now I want to join Goonswarm. But anyway, go on, Matterall.
I'm sure Aerith might invite you in if these things work out, if your investments pay off. You lose all your money, probably not.
You got some good knee pads and a bib. We can talk.
Okay, so and I want to highlight how interesting that last point was, and that is the way the two philosophies of financial marketeering work. And one is you figure out things for yourself and invest and share maybe some information with friends. But the other one is that you figure it out and share it with all your teammates because they're all on the same team. And then you kind of ensure their investments by coming in and buying everything up if it's starting to fail or whatever. And two completely different ways of looking at it. One is to hold information from others, and the other one is to share information.
Well, to be fair, we do both. Like, there's things that will stay cabal only if it's a hypothesis or a theory that is very advanced in nature that revealing it would kind of reveal the future moves. Mm-hmm. But in general, we found our membership only needs to know the next move. I don't need to explain the next three or four. And as long as I'm able to just say, go do this, and we know what the results are, like, we all, like, as far as leaking, like, we were not able to even tell our directorate without our directorate leaking to their corp. So we plan for that.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, very, very interesting. So what's it like, ProBag, being inside, I don't know if it's a cabal, but it's definitely a different financial group of investors that talk to each other and share information. What's that like?
You know, it's nice because you get to bounce ideas off of people. You get to say, check your own ideas. You know, you can't disclose too much, but you can say, hey, so if such and such were the case, would you guys go for it? Do you think that'd be a good idea? And more importantly, you have people that can give you money if you come up with a really good idea, and you have people that you can give money to if they come up with a good idea. If, you know, there's a select few people in that community that if tomorrow they message me, and you're like, hey, ProBack, I just got a really good idea. Can't tell you, but I'm going to give you 5% a month if you give me 500 bill. There's a couple of people that I would give it to because 5% is pretty nice.
So this bank, when does it start? And how do people come and ask you to get involved? Or is there no way to get involved? You kind of just pick people.
All right. So let me finish that topic real quick. Okay. Sure. So basically what I want to do is the second point of a bank, the main thing, not the loans. Is I want to get a futures market going, and I wanted to make it so that people can bet on the price of Plex, on the price of injectors. They can take long positions, short positions. They can bet for it or against it, and just want it to be a smooth process. And right now, the first thing I did, I think I've almost finished so far, is a user interface where I just set up a little website where with just one button you can buy futures. You reserve your thing and then you just send me money in game. The website scans my API and it puts things in your wallet, and you can just, you have this ledger of who's bought what, etc., and when the cash out value day is, all that shit. I just want to get a good UI going first so it's accessible. Because yeah, my goal is to make it accessible to anyone that wants. It's probably just going to be with people and marketing discussions, just and the subforum that are going to invest. But I want anyone who wants to bet on Plex to be able to access that. Because if that kind of market takes off, it's going to be really good for the future. In the future, if I want to get some kind of deal going, if I want to get some kind of investment opportunity going, this will make it so that I can finance it better. Just having this market available and set up. Which is why, honestly, I think I'm going to lose money, because I think I'm going to intentionally make bad guesses to the point where I lose about 5-10%, and other people make money, so that, you know, it encourages people to bet on this. It becomes hopefully kind of a healthy thing that will last.
Why do you think you're going to lose money? Because you're going to take more risks?
I'm going to make a bad guess. Like, I'm going to guess that Plex is going to be, I don't know, 3 million each in August. I think it's going to be higher than that personally. I personally think it's going to be around 3.2. Okay, I'm going to make a bad guess like that, and people are going to bet against me, and they're going to win. That's why I think I'm going to lose money.
Oh, so you're kind of the casino or the house, and they're betting against you on this thing?
Yeah, that's kind of what shorts and longs are in the financial world, though people don't like to think of it as betting. But yeah, it's basically allowing for that kind of framework. Because, you know, any investment at its core is just a bet. And the point of this futures market to get it going is just to make it easier to make these kinds of investments, these kinds of bets. So that if you think Plex is going up, you don't have to buy a whole Plex for 3 mil right now and sit on it and wait. You can just buy a piece of paper for, let's say, 0.5 mil. And you can buy six times as many of those if you want to bet more. Or you can use your money elsewhere. And, you know, if you lose, you lose. If you win, you win. But ultimately, it's the same outcome as just buying Plex. You just spend less money on it. And that's the goal I want to get.
Well, it's interesting. You're having to, it sounds like, develop your own system. How good is Eve for this kind of thing?
It's awful.
Obviously, that's what I was going to ask. It's not as good as it sounds, right? A lot of the stuff you have to come up with on your own, but you couldn't. This doesn't replicate real life where you could practice investments.
I'm doing my best to make it where, you know, it replicates it enough. But no, so the first thing I tried to do was figure out if I can do this in Eve without any kind of outside software, just the contract system in Eve. And there's some interesting things that you can do. If you say you make a curry contract and you package it into an auction contract, you know, you can, creative use of a contract system can get you pretty far, but it can't get you far enough. So in the end, I'm just going to have to track this all with my own software, my own spreadsheets running in the background on a little Raspberry Pi 24/7. But yeah, it's awful. Honestly, if there was just a little bit more support, if we had a dev that could dedicate just a bit of time to the financial sector in Eve, we don't need a lot. We just need the ground, the basics of it, and that can be built on. But no one's looked at that stuff in years now, honestly.
Wouldn't it be wild
at
if
least
they
half
had
a decade?
Yeah, wouldn't it be wild if they had, instead of like ghost fitting, they had like ghost investing? play scenarios out and see how they would pay off.
That would be pretty cool. If they added any kind of basic mechanism that forced someone to buy a certain item at a time or like pay out a certain amount, I can go more into more detail at other times, you know, probably to some CCTP dev, but this financial community needs just really simple stuff implemented that we can build on and make complex things out of, but that simple stuff just isn't in game. And I know, I think you've had Caleb Ariana, whatever his last name in game is, on this show before. He's that one financial guy. He's bitched about this as well, and he's got a point. I might not agree with him on most things, but he's got a point about this.
Yeah, so this it's kind of a plea to do a few more financial tools in the game because it's such a interesting part of the game. In fact, that's one of the reasons I played. My friend was trying to leverage me to play this game with him. And he said, look, they have an economist that actually monitors the health of the economy in the game. And he's like he's a serious economist. Of course, he's now gone. But that was really impressive that a game was so big and reflected so much real life stuff that they had to have like an actual economist making sure that the markets were healthy. That was one of the attractive things about the game.
Yeah. Do I have another few minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So one slightly exciting thing they're finally getting around to doing after, I sound bitter and I am bitter, but thanks CCP for doing this. They're finally adding a ESI endpoint to track public contracts, which means, you know, right now you can pull up all the market data on your computer. You don't have to log into Eve. You can do it in your browser. They're finally making it so you can pull up all the contract data on there as well. And one cool thing about that is that this means you'll be able to look for RMTers, because that's one really popular way to RMT. You make bullshit contracts. And, you know, with this endpoint, you'll be able to go through and just make a script that looks for people who regularly make bullshit contracts and give away free money. And you can name and shame them. And hopefully one day that'll actually get them banned. I can only hope.
Well, that's interesting.
But that's finally getting added to the API.
Well, let's talk about the API for now, because I know that we were talking before the show and Aerith was saying there's a lot of technology that Goonswarm has built up for, I guess, for different things, right? That he has to now make sure gets converted over properly to the new ESI language. So should we explain that for people who don't know what's happening? I believe it's May 8th. There is no longer support for XML in the API.
It's do you want to, Arif? Or do I want
to? I have a lot of experience with it. I've been talking with CCP about it for months, where I feel like the timeline is somewhat arbitrary and aggressive. And they're using it as an excuse not to fix the XML API, which has been broken and breaking more and more. And now it's essentially unusable. So they didn't even make the date supporting the old API. And then it's hard when you're an organization with as much IT complexity as we have. Like, we have great admins and great coders, and some of our coders have disappeared over the years for some of the legacy apps. But we have these apps that are super complex. Think of it as a financial and IT and SRP ecosystem built around the old API that's, you know, a decade old or more, that all has to be recoded. And you have to find new devs to find the old code and check it out, modify it, you know, try to get it all fixed. That's a lot of different apps that have to be done in just a single year. And so if you've spent 10 years building an ecosystem and you have at best as many devs as you had at peak at any one of those years, and you're rewriting a portion of all of those applications, that sucks. So we definitely are going to have some apps that go blind. I think for the most part, our major ones will continue to function. They've been converted or will be converted. But I do think a lot of our, especially our financial tools, that may go dark for some period of time. And by the way, the ESI API kind of sucks, and it throws 500 errors like crazy. And we've been reporting those to CCP and not getting a lot back.
So they're just saying, let's move on to a different technology.
Well, no, this is the new API. The new ESI API is kind of trashy, and it's throwing a lot of errors, and nobody seems to know why or can tell us why.
So it's an amazing part of the game that really isn't explained. These organizations, especially ones that have tens of thousands of characters in it, that's a lot of people to organize. You have to do it with the help of technology. There's no other way. So when they change the background of the technology, that puts a huge burden on you guys to evolve and adapt. Do you think it's going to go smoothly?
No, I think that CCP has probably permanently killed part of Eve's application ecosystem. It doesn't look like Evemon's going to survive this. It doesn't look like anyone's willing to pick it up. We're having to revamp systems that we had open sourced long ago that seem abandoned that we're gonna have to in-source again. I understand CCP's reasons for doing what they do, and I think it can enable a more complex ecosystem later and maybe mobile apps someday, which I keep advocating for, but you know, no NDA information on that either. But there is a cost. Like, we are losing applications that no longer have active developers willing to support them that would have functioned just fine probably for many years if they hadn't done this. And so Eve is losing a part of its ecosystem now.
Just want to add on, as someone who writes code for both my hobby and my actual job, going back and rewriting an old application, especially when you're not the one who originally wrote it, is the most awful thing you can possibly imagine. It's just, it's not worth doing at
it's
all.
It's twice the work, right?
It's five times the work.
You got to reverse engineer it, figure out what they were doing, and then fix it.
Yeah.
Instead of just doing it from scratch the way you know how to do it.
Yeah, it's definitely been a tremendous lift. I mean, luckily we've got a really good cadre of developers, but it's a hobby. It's a finite amount of time they can allocate on their weekends to try to catch a lot of these apps up. And so it's just shitty. And if CCP ever comes out public and says, well, you guys had a lot of time. It's like, no, we didn't have parity until the last few months. Let me give me a break.
Yeah.
Sound a little bitter because I've been raising this concern with CCP for a few months now, and all they care about is making their day. Hell to hell with the ecosystem.
Yeah, that's I kind of hear that's been a pattern, especially after FanFest, again, which we'll cover next week. But the new stuff that's coming out is like the buzz is like they still haven't worked out a lot of the stats and details and stuff. But that's just what I hear. The other thing I wanted to point out for ProBag was the you have a whole functioning T3 industrial workflow. With characters and, you know, the resources you need to build T3. It's a whole assembly line.
Yeah,
and you're selling
like 84 characters.
Tell us about the sale of that.
All right, so really quick intro. I started this as a hobby last year, a year and a half ago, something like that, because I just wanted to see if I could take over free T3 market entirely. You know, it was just a challenge for myself to see if I could take it over entirely, push everyone else out, be the only one making T3 pretty much. And I got there. I got to a point where most of the nano ribbons being sold in Jita, I think it was something like 85%, 90, between 85 and 90 every day were going to me. And I was just eating them up and turning them into T3 stuff. And yeah, it's been a year and a half or so. And I got there and then I quit and I got there again. And not really into it anymore. I just want to sell it.
Did the nerfs hurt you?
No, actually, that helped me a lot. I was about to mention that. But T3 rebalance, there was a war going on back then. I don't know, Test invaded the North, Darkness. I don't know if that had a name, but, you know, Test staged out of DRF lands and fought Darkness. And then right after that, the CO2 thing happened. I made a lot of money off that because there were several people who I'm not going to name that bought huge quantities. One of them bought, I think, either 1,500 or 1,800 Lokis with full fits off me. And I was just, you know, pumping them out because I could do it. I had enough characters and I made a lot of money off that. T3 rebalance in that war was really good for me.
What's a lot of money to you?
I don't know. So my T3 thing, if I'm actually running it, if I'm not taking a break like I have been for the last month, I make about 5 bill a day off it. That's what I have it set to. I could probably make more, but you know, I have my software set to only make 5 bill a day. I have it hard coded in there where, you know, it spits out what prices I need to list everything out in Jita. I just copy those prices into Eve, list everything at the price it tells me. And those prices are supposed to make me 5 bill a day. So that's normal money for me. A lot of money. During those times, I think I was making something like 25 bill a day for like couple weeks.
That's when you have the big orders. So you were making it 5 billion max because you didn't want to flood the market on yourself?
No, see, I'm already flooding the market, or, you know, when I actually do it, I already flood the market. I push prices down. I make sure no one can do it. I set it to 5 bill, honestly, for predatory pricing. Two reasons. First off, because I don't want to put a 1 ISK. Second off, because I want to push out everyone else from market. And if I just set it to a low profit like that, instead of 10, I set it to 5, no one's going to point a 1 ISK me because my price is already too low. They can't afford to compete with me. So I can just set them there, never modify my orders, and just move on with my life. Because, you know, building the whole T3 market sounds like a lot of work. But when you have all the software that you need for it, it's 1.5 hours, 2 hours a day. And actually having to go in and point a 1 ISK and Jita Warrior, all those items, so it would be a lot more effort than that, and it's just not worth it because it's not what I was trying to do.
Something for the fans, because we're getting somebody asking, what's the net worth of you guys? This is something that's easy for them to understand. So what is your guys' net worth?
I'm well into double-digit trillions. To give you an idea, like my great one I just had was I made 1.2 million in 4 days, or sorry, trillion in 4 days. So 1.2 trillion is 4 days. That was a new record.
Ah, that hurts.
Yeah, see, I'm only at about 2.5 trill. So, that's what Arif makes in a week.
Oh my
God. It was a good week, to be fair. We had just manipulated all the markets and started cashing everything in, but you know.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about those markets in just a minute. The last thing about this T3 thing is that you're taking all this and you're selling it. Why?
Because I don't really want to do it anymore. I lost the motivation to do it. And, you know, I only do things in EVE because I want to. I have enough money that I can just fly spaceships for the rest of my life. I only do things because I find it fun, and I don't find this fun anyway anymore. And it's also, the problem with selling it is that it's a very specialized thing. I've got 3 Tataras and 4 Raitarus that are T2 rigged. They're worth, I think, about 100, 150 bill. Just the structures and the rigs. And they can't be used for pretty much anything else but this T3 market thing. So I need to find someone that wants to do exactly this. And honestly, this far, I found 3 people. One of them, the one who I actually want to sell it to right now, wants to not just buy the whole infrastructure, all the structures and all the software. He also wants to buy my leftover raw materials, which is around 350, 400 bill of just wormhole gas and salvage that's just sitting out in Nullsec right now. And I don't want to JF it back to Jita. So really thinking of selling it to him, since that saves me a lot of JF trips.
JF means jump freighter trips. So you basically are selling the assembly line, and he's buying all the ingredients that he needs to keep the assembly line going, so you don't have to move those to sell them at market.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, the software is the main part of this, because, you know, anyone can click buttons in EVE, anyone can install jobs, but making it to where analyzing this market is not a 10-hour job, it's a 2-minute script. That's the thing that actually, I don't know, not a lot of people have done, apparently.
Well, that's the amazing part of this. And you can see it. There's a video inside the thread on EVE forums. So there's an EVE forum thread about the sale. And if you look there, about 6 posts down is a video link that shows you how the process works. And I think you take like 30 minutes to show people this is how you do it. And
yeah, so that 30 minutes. Yeah. Go on.
And it's remarkable to see that he's built a process, not just the stuff in-game, but a whole process outside of the game to capture data, to be able to manipulate data. But go ahead.
So yeah, about 30 minutes is pretty much what was my daily ritual when I did T3. That was it. Some days I would have to do a bit more. Some days I would just have to do that. It was never more than 2 hours. But the main part of that video is that the script that actually sets everything up, that makes my shopping list, that sets up my settings so I know what jobs to install, how many runs. That script takes about 30 seconds to run. And that's the main workhorse. The rest of that video is just me messing around, writing things in Notepad, eventually installing jobs. But that script is the main attraction. And also, I made a super cool custom EVE launcher for multi-boxing all my stuff. That's also going for it with it, and that's also real useful. Where, you know, I can just press a couple of keys on my keyboard and just launches 14 characters that I want directly.
What is it, cell phone?
Mm-hmm.
That's wild. Okay, so you found some buyers. Have you agreed on a sell price?
The guy I'm talking to right now wants to give me a 205 or 210 bill for the infrastructure, and then 95% of Jita price for the materials is what I think we're going to agree on, which I like. It's a good deal.
What's that come to? Can you say?
I would have to total up my materials. I know it's on the 550 to 600 bill range, but I'm not sure where exactly in that range it is.
So the assembly line and all that stuff is 200 billion, 200, roughly.
Yeah. And then materials are just, there's like 350, 400 bill of materials just sitting there. It's just wormhole gas and wormhole salvage.
Wow.
And see, that's why I want to set up a bank and loan money to people, because I'm going to have 600 billion of cash and I'm not going to be around to invest it. So I want to find, you know, no offense to the people listening to this, but probably not going to loan you uncollateralized if I don't know you, but I want to find someone to loan it to.
So when's somebody going to open up like micro lending for the, I need to buy a new destroyer because I just got killed.
Here's the thing, Lateral. The amount of effort that would take into handling that kind of micro lending, like you actually have to press a button to give people money, and having to press like 10 buttons an hour to give people money for destroyers, that's just too much. Yeah. If you have an organization like Gloonscorm, then you can do it through SRP or something. You can find people to press buttons for you, but for just one person to set this up, not viable.
Well, that's what I find is tricky. Like, there are people who are so wealthy in the game, they wouldn't mind, say, finding a good cause for the money. Like, I'm doing something that I found a good cause for the money, but, and I'm not anywhere near you guys, by the way, so I'm not comparing. But, you know, when you get wealthy enough, you want a good cause. The problem is the paperwork to give the people the money that you want to give them. And there's nothing that can really help you with that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, that's amazingly interesting. And so when we talk about individual wealth like yours, we also want to look at empire building wealth, which Aerith is well known for, because Goonswarm, according to the MER, is just going gangbusters, right?
Yeah, having a nice official CCP scoreboard is really cool.
Yeah. That's part of your master plan, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Like, it was, if people hadn't heard that story, like, the way we work is we plan for either outcome. And so when I asked them, hey, would you want to remove this from the MER, part of it? We wanted part of it obscured. One, I do want that because I think it is too much information. But if they don't do it, or they generate controversy in doing it to where they roll it back and then everyone's looking at the MER, well, now you're looking at our basic, the best recruiting tool in the history of EVE, so I win. Like, either way, I was going to win. That's the best part about that story.
So who's going to be doing them after CCP Quant goes?
Looks like Larrikin. They originally had told us Recurve was, but now it looks like it's going to be Larrikin taking up the torch.
No, that's good. Good to see somebody's taking up that mantle.
Yeah, there's some problems with it we're trying to get fixed. Like, there's definitely some errors in the reporting that we're not quite sure how they're manifesting. Well, we know they're manifesting in a certain way, but we just don't know what the underlying cause is.
All right. So what's going on with one of the biggest things that changed recently is it changes to moon mining. And it went from a thing that some person could do that was assigned the job in an alliance to group work, which means that low-sec pirates didn't have that income anymore, which is probably why Snuff is taking up space in Aquarius and is, I don't know if they're mining or ratting or whatever, but their moon income isn't what it used to be. But groups like yours have built-in advantages because you guys have organization. You have pacification, which means that you control your territory pretty well. You guys have a police force that drills on how to like save Rorquals when they're getting attacked. And you have a lot of people. Just seems like you're the new high sec.
I mean, to some degree, those are both all true, but high sec, I kind of wish, but no. It's fundamentally that we were prepared for this mechanic kind of change. We had foreseen it. We'd been planning years for it. We knew what the cutover was likely to look like. And then once the dev blogs came out and it kind of revealed that it was largely how we would like to have seen the mechanics come in, that we already had a plan for, okay, we need this much capital a month. We need to deploy this many structures. We need to deploy them in this way, in this pattern. Here's how we're going to value the moons. Here's the first stage. Here's the second stage. Here's the third. We're going into the third stage, which is about to be announced on moons itself soon. But phase four of our overall plan. So we still have a lot of phases to go, but we were just ahead of the curve. And having stockpiles for the reaction side of the house has tremendously helped us. So we've been able to deploy, you know, GSOL, you know, has been doing a great job of deploying all these structures, making our pastures, making an income stream for our individual members, expanding the holding capacity of Delve. Like, all of those things are coming into play, and everyone else just got flat-footed. Like, even to this day, no other empire on the map is utilizing their space even with the appropriate capital location. Like, not one alliance has even picked the right capital yet. Like, that's how the distinction between us and everyone else is. We've been making a series of very good decisions that layer on each other, and no one else has really even made the first decision right yet.
the only people that came close, according to MER, was the Guardians of the Galaxies was ratting their to their heart's content. And they had pretty high on the ratting scale compared to everybody else except you guys. And they're getting decimated by your raids into their territory.
Yeah, their whole economy's tanking. Like, you can watch in the stats, like the MER reflects this. We privately track stats as well with our own tools that reflect this. So we're able to give our FCs a sense for how much they've impacted their economy. Oh, wow. Asher and the guys are just that they're curb stomping dudes.
So you're giving a loop of feedback to the FCs. They're doing a good job.
Yeah, like we can even recommend targets to some extent, but you know, by the time even that comes around, I think Asher has already did set the whole region on fire for the most part, so it didn't really matter.
Oh, interesting. So back to the moon thing. So you guys made the adjustments. You said there were like four or five, or you said more phases. What are those phases?
So I won't go into the future phases because those are still OPSEC. But the first phase was establish a market. We knew that the market would be the underpinnings of everything. So getting the market churning correctly was kind of phase one. Number two was sourcing raw materials to feed the greater economy. You could argue that should have been one, but until you have one, you couldn't have really had two. Then after that, it was how do we get ancillary products within our economy? This would be like building up the stack. This could be importation, whatever. And then phase four was private ownership of wealth generating assets, which is what the phase we're in now. And that has sub phases. There's like three sub phases in there. But by the time we get to phase eight, which is about as far out as we planned so far, we're probably at least two or three more years. And we've already taken a couple years on these. So the entire eight phase plan is probably about a 5-year plan.
I have a few questions about that. Private ownership of assets. What's that? People building up their own wealth to build their own infrastructure inside?
Yeah, so it's the form of infrastructure. It's mass reactions. It'll be large-scale T2 ship production where lots of BPO holders within Delve, that sort of thing. So it also manifested very early on, way back in like phase two, as super capital production. So we have obviously a tremendous amount of super capital production. And then there was a phase zero before. These are all economic phases that I'm referring to. Our phase zero was securing Delve, like which is what you saw us spend the first 6 months of arriving to Delve on, which was just securing the region, fortifying it to where no one could follow us and kick us out.
Yeah, I noticed that you guys took your time doing that, too, amongst criticism, like you guys weren't doing much. You were just down there, but you were slowly securing the area.
Yeah, like we quite literally have every system in Delve, I think, affordances are now. We have 20 plus keeps. We have 1,500 moon miners or something retarded. Like, I mean, come on, think about how many timers that is. It's crazy.
Yeah. And the so phase zero was securing the place, and now your economic plan could happen. You picked your capital, and you know, we went through the four phases there. The fourth phase, is it the fourth phase where, what's the phase where you get the people?
Those were all the phases probably after phase, right around in phase two it started. We call it the accretion disk. And so wealth and success attracts more people, right? I mean, that's just human nature. Why would you want to be with this shitty corporation or alliance getting camped in their own space and shit on in their own stager when you can be in the great grasslands of Delve, like, you know, happily grazing as your little cow nature wants?
We've seen that recently, right? Haven't people from other places kind of move their corporations over in more public way than normal?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of high profile flips, or, you know, high profile being relative. They're not judge level flips, but people flipping infrastructure to us, stealing on the way out. So it's kind of the death spiral effect, right? You know, once a few corps doing it, a few more corps start thinking about doing it, and then you got a real problem on your hands. It's never the first one or two. It's okay, what comes after those? Like, and then how many people are just going to bail quietly?
Right. For everything that you see, there's 10, 20 people that are doing the same thing or thinking the same thing about moving over that aren't doing it publicly.
Yeah, there's a lot of fair weathering now for the last few years. Basically, since the casino war, everyone's kind of a fair weather friend. Hardly anyone, basically no one almost keeps their agreements. Everyone just goes wherever the flavor of the month is, wherever they think they can get, you know, the most, I don't know, karma at, whatever. So for us, it's very much a long-term plan where we have a strategy, we're executing on that strategy, and everyone else is just living in the moment, right? Which is great if you're at a rave and listen to some trance, but if you're playing EVE, it's not a great strategy.
Well, what do you think that is? Is that a mechanics problem that everybody's a fair weather friend?
Well, it's a coward problem. They're all a bunch of cowards, right? I mean, that's the fundamental nature. They're not tribal. Their cowardice overcomes tribalism.
Yeah. I wonder if it's a more systemic problem, or is it really just that many people are cowards? Like, there seems to be a real consolidation of people going to really few sides, right? There's maybe like three sides, instead of there being more of an ecosystem where people are trying to make it on their own.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain people that I think will always be loyal to each other, right? Like, NCPL are generally always going to be allied. I don't see any way to really separate those two. Those entities need each other. They're fundamentally a strategic partner of each other for now until one of them disbands, right? Mm-hmm. Or they get some super hostile fight triggered between the two somehow. Whereas like us and maybe some of the Imperium are probably always going to be together. I couldn't really see this turning on people that have been with us since early deck. But at the same time, we shed half of the Imperium. Like, you know, Razor went off and they're in the drone lands or whatever. I think. I'm not even sure where they are. And we had other like FCONs and we had the CO2 traders, right? So literally half the Imperium were basically fair weather friends. So it's not even on one side or the other. It's a problem throughout EVE. There's some exceptions, but for the most part, you can't rely on anyone except your own tribe anymore.
And then what's that from? Do people just breaking their word all the time, or?
Yeah, a little bit. I think, I said this on the meta show, I think last week, you got the three ages of EVE, right? You had the age of diplomacy when friends and deals really, really mattered, right? Kind of when Bio-Rat was around. Then you kind of had the age of the military where it was just star FCs and big dunks kind of ruling the day and, you know, wrecking ball and doctrines and supercaps. And now you kind of have the economic era of EVE where it's changed what players want out of their alliance. They want good pasture. They want good places where they can earn wealth and generate ISK. And if you can't give that to them, they're going to go to somewhere else that can. Maybe they'll keep a PvP main in your alliance, but they're going to do all their other activity in Delph or somewhere else like Esoteria, wherever. And all they're doing then is supporting the other empire. Like, if they're not doing economic activity to you, you are screwing up. And there's a lot of alliances that haven't adopted to that meta.
Again, you were baffled by why they're not doing it.
Well, yeah, like, think about it. Think about the lessons that we had to learn in deck, right? One of the lessons, well, first of all, there was timing, right? The patch was coming in that was changing how all SOB worked. But you had a few confluences of events that occurred to even be able to kill us, right? And not kill us, but just kind of drive us away from deck, which is you had to have infinite ISK, essentially, with the casinos, which was the defining factor, because that ISK then what it was used to buy bodies for the fight, right? So it wasn't about all of EVE versus us, which is why we don't call it what we're be, because one, that's a CCP name, and two, why were the people there? Because of infinite ISK, because they were hired, right? That's what kicked it all off. It's not like PL started that war. It was a bunch of random people hired and had ISK. So that's why it was the defining moment in what we aspire as the casino war. So we knew that in the future meta, you had to account for two things. You had to account for numbers, mass numbers against you, with, you know, somewhat short notice, with a few weeks notice, and you had to account for infinite ISK. So the only way to counter that is to essentially have infinite ISK on your own, or so much ISK that it doesn't matter in war scale terms, like in terms of a year or two, and you had to have more numbers. So I feel like we've learned the lessons of deck and we've adapted and we've become far more powerful than we ever have been. So, and I think the stats show that.
Yeah, it's funny. I go back. One of the things that I do after time has passed, like a year or two, I'll go back and listen to either podcasts or read articles, what people were saying at the time, because, you know, people are always predicting what's going to happen in the future. And just to see how wrong people were about Goonswarm is very interesting. And I may bring it up at some point on a show and play out some of the audio that I heard. But I think there was one show on Jeff Rader podcast where he gathered the people who said they were behind what they called World War B and what we call Casino War at INN. And just to see how excited they were that this was happening first. But the second part of it is how they were predicting your demise. Like, I remember a guy from Snuff, I forget his name, but he was saying, they're just making our job easier by making everybody go into Goonswarm instead of being in their own place. And there's just a lot of that. You can hear them saying, like, this is the end for them kind of feeling is the vibe that they're giving off. Some are more conservative than others, but you could definitely feel a lot of bravado.
Yeah, now, humorous. Stuff is a part. Like, they didn't understand. Like, they don't understand us. and they don't understand the new mechanics that came in right when that war kicked off. That's the other people don't understand. Like, Citadels were just coming in. It was like a few weeks before, so it was months after Citadels when we started falling, because they fundamentally changed how war was done. So you have to contend with Infinite Isk, effectively, you know, outnumbered, and a new type of warfare in your own space, all at the same time. And that's what it took us to kick out of the deck, which is an inferior reason to Delve. So imagine how we feel right now in Delve with a gazillion structures, more Isk than all of them combined, and a shitload of super capitals and titans. Like, they're not coming. And they're not coming because they know they're going to get shit stomped, or we're going to be willing to push all in a few times in a row, and they can't do it. Even if they win one or two, just with a dunk, all we have to do is win one. And if we cost them a few trillion in one shot, it's good game next year for them to engage again.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, like I was saying, one of the guys that was the most effusive about Goonswarm dying was from Snuff, the FC from Snuff. And here they are joining you.
Yeah, can't beat them, join them. Like, hey, look, it's a valid strategy. If you see an economic powerhouse, it's also a military powerhouse that is unassailable in their home kingdom and are just going to spend as long as anyone will allow and can tolerate it just shitting on your space from remote, we're getting all the content our people need and want, and we're making tons of money doing it. So we're having our cake and eating it too, and no one else is. So it's going to – more people are going to join us over time because it's more fun. Everyone likes being on the winning side, right? You see it in Planet side. I mean, you see it in the Zerg.
That's Zerg. The problem. So how do we stop you?
We have to die. Like, at this point, our advantage is too far. We've had 2 years on everybody. We still are getting more money than everyone else still. So you get a figure. It's probably going to last another year. We've got this massive grand manipulation we're running in Mungu that is generating insane amounts of wealth for us personally and the Alliance and all our membership. You're pretty fucked for a little while. Like, you guys need to sort your shit out, and you need to actually start playing Eve and acting like you give a shit and logging in, or you're not. Like, we're just going to have to die a slow death as Eve death spirals over like a decade.
But we'll come back to stopping you in a second because I have some ideas. But what you guys have, to me, the assessment is, and I advocated for attacking Goonswarm a long time ago, was you've created such redundancy and such a strong economic model that you can, again, you can fight a war of attrition for a long time against just about everybody and still win, because every Keepstar they kill, you have 19 more, or, you know, every Fortizar in, I think, are all your systems, do they all have Fortizar?
Yeah, every one of them. Even like Quirius now is getting them in Fountain.
Oh, that's amazing.
And then it's not just the Fortizars, it's all the Astrahus, it's all the Retarus, it's all the other economic structures in those systems. So you fly through Delve, and it's just like you're flying through HiSec, to your point earlier. Like, yeah, we got a shitload of structures, and they're all owned by the Alliance in general. Like, we keep probably the majority of them, because we keep all the Moonminers, we keep all the Keeps, and the Fortizars, you know, in, to some extent. So it's not like these are structures that are going to suddenly be unanchored in an invasion. We're very purposeful about making sure that we own the structures when they donate them for refineries, because it's another, you know, 1,200 structures in Delve that people have to account for that aren't going to turn tail and run. We're going to make you grind them.
So the natural thing is for you to fortify and then to project force. And that seems to be what's happening in small ways. One is that you did, well, I won't say it was lucky because you worked on it, but you got a judge to kill his own guys. Boom, they're gone. That was instant. But you had also been working with other diplomats to try to turn somebody against them. So it was already in progress. Something was going to happen with CO2 because you wanted that revenge. But now you're projecting up into the north into your old home of Decline and really causing significant harm to, first of all, Horde that was in one area, 9-4 battle. That was a huge battle based on knocking out a forward operating base from Horde and Guardians of the Galaxies. And that ended up in a stalemate. But they both sides retreated, right? Nobody really kept that territory. And now you're up there again, causing a lot of problems for the pacified North, which doesn't appear to be, at least in Guardian of the Galaxy space.
Right. You had this sustained campaign from us, you know, against Cloud Ring and Period Bases, or sorry, Pure Blind, where the culmination of it was Gobbins had to pull a brave Sir Robin and run away. That's essentially what happened. Like, you can spin it however the fuck you want. But the only reason you needed growth space was because you're getting camped the shit out of yourself, right? Well, then they moved to Geminate, which is arguably maybe the only other region Eve more easily camped than where they were at. So it's just that they ran. So it's like, oh, well, Guardians of the Galaxy is right here. So let's just shit on them now. But maybe we'll just work our way around the map. Like, but right now, I think our guys are having so much fun that, yeah, they're going to basically kill that whole little coalition up there unless NC keeps holding their hand for the next few months. And it's already been, what, six that we've been chewing on that whole Northwest? So, yeah, like, you're signing up for just, like, the worst waterboarding in the history of EVE if you try to help Guardians of the Galaxy now.
Well, that's the thing. It seems like the, you know, all these incursions are nothing. They're just fun until they start working. And then, all of a sudden, like, it's like water. It's, you know, a little bit of a trickle.
Well, like, becoming the I'm not going to, like, bullshit anyone. I don't spin like some of the other guys. Like, I'm not going to say it wasn't a strategy from day one. Like, that's no. I'm not disingenuous enough to say that.
Wait, you're saying it wasn't a strategy?
No, I'm saying it was always a strategy. Oh. Like, before our first person moved into Fountain, it was a strategy. It started with the culture.
Oh, your strategy has been what? To work your way back up to the north?
Well, I won't go into all the details because that probably is corrupted. But yes, essentially, yes. Not work our way back up. We don't want the space. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that everyone that is in our old space is going to get fucked with and shit on because, you know, revenge is fun.
The war is still on for you guys.
Yeah, like, to us, the war never ended, really. It's just in a different type of phase now, and it's much more slow burn, but it's not like we forget. Like, if the one thing that people know about goons, we don't forgive and forget. We will keep coming until we get you. Even if it takes us half a decade, we don't care.
Did you adopt that from the Russian way of doing business?
I think, yeah, to some degree. I think it was because we had a large, old money, super capital type power. Not at the time, they didn't have tons of super capitals, but the disparity was the same. Since that happened to us early on with Bob, I think we've always had a, like, if anyone fucks with us in an existential way, that we can never forgive it and we must get revenge. Like, we've always had that mentality, and I'm sure the Russians influenced that.
Well, wait a minute, then. How come Snuff's inside of the Imperium?
I don't think we've ever considered Snuff a real, well, I don't want to insult him, but, you know, how do I put this? Not one of our nemesises.
Oh, but they were in World War B with...
Yeah, I don't think they weren't a player that we really associate with it to that degree.
Well, they did.
Like, if I named the top five alliances we want revenge on for the Xena War, they would not be in the top five.
Oh,
they wouldn't even be in the top 10, I don't think.
Who are the top five, and how many have you knocked off?
CO2 was number one, and then PL and NC. NC is probably number two. PL would be number three. And then Tess would have probably been number five. Like, four is debatable. I think depending on who you ask.
Did FCON even make the cut?
I don't think FCON would have made the cut. They would have been somewhere like 7, 8, 9. They weren't technically traitors. They were just fair weather friends and cowards. So, like, don't get me wrong. We initially we're going to go after FCON. What was happening? There was something happening in the South. FCON was moved to the South. And when they first moved to the South, we very seriously considered invading them at the time. Yeah. But I think I was advocating that we don't, that we secure Delve to a further degree. And I'm glad with our decision.
Yeah, they were the first ones in the South.
We thought about doing it right away, like as they were moving in. But
I was watching that situation because I was like, oh, they just moved South. Are they going to get it? Are they going to be the first ones attacked? And then you guys started helping Stain. So I thought, they're in proximity. They could jump over and try to take on
FCON. We definitely consider there was a lot of discussion. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because it never did happen. You guys went back and took care of Delve, it looks like.
Okay, yeah, so I was one of the big advocates for that. Like, I did not want to overextend. I wanted to pour as much money as we could per month, not in SRP, but into fortifications. And then, you know, ramp the SRP into the sky, you know, the sky like we have now.
So the voices that were saying, let's kill FCON, there was definitely some voices?
I would say they were probably the majority of the voices at the end of time.
How'd you win that fight?
Well, you got to remember, this is the age of economy. So I will say that these phases play out in our own leadership too. Like, finance for many years had a very, I don't want to say diminished, but to somewhat, that's a good word. Like, we weren't a powerful voice because we were a means to an end, right? We weren't, the grand strategy and the meta didn't support finance being a super critical thing, you know, back in the day when you had top-down income. But now finance has a much more prominent role because this is probably the age of finance for, you know, the next, it's been the last couple of years, it probably will be the next two. Like, finance is the most powerful thing your organization have right now because it enables so many other things. And we have such a disparity between us and the other powers that if they don't make radical changes soon, I think they lock in this advantage for another half decade. So you're seeing that kind of play out even within our own leadership, where finance will be like, no, we can't do this. But now it's gotten to the point now where it's kind of like, we're arguing over whether your discretionary income should be $500 billion or $1 trillion a month on top of, you know, that much in savings, on top of that much in baseline expenses. Like, that is the kind of arguments we have now, not, oh, can we afford a Fortizar or two? It's more like, should we buy 20 this month?
Hmm. Well, again, with the strong economic model and this, the pacification of your territory, that is very attractive to people, and people are the ones that actually do the work. So at some point, because you're winning, people are going to come over to your side and treat the advanced harvesting of NullSec, which means you can get a lot more out of the territory if you're an individual person. It's going to be much more attractive than saying, why should I be in HiSec where I can only do 1/4 what I can do in NullSec? And why not join the goons if they have the security taken care of and I can just go there and do all the cool stuff that's, you know, the bigger stuff, the harvesting?
That is occurring. However, I would say predominantly our numbers have been swelling due to NullSec individuals coming, like whether they're alts of people that keep their main and the old alliance. Like, it's just, it's not even a secret anymore, but like everybody has alts and goons now to make money. Like, it's just, it's wow. Comical. Like, there's times where I almost want to be like, we should stop banning spies because they're not really spies. They're just people that want to make money.
Of all people, I don't, even though I work at INN.
Oh, I figured you would have a hidden alt for sure. I figured all the editors did.
No, I had one in there, but it was just to get pings to know what was going on. And I just never used him and he got kicked out for inactivity.
Well, so you did.
In that case, it was actually a spy ping.
I told Scion was the one like, here, put somebody in goons so that you know what's going on. And I did. It was by invitation. There was no hiding about it. But that guy came out of there a long time ago.
Yeah, like so our economy is still growing. Each time we hit a new peak, we have to solve some other issue, right? We had to do the ochre rule, which was huge. That's why our mining numbers went back up. You know, not mining the ochre became a serious problem for the spawn rates. It was killing the productivity of the region. People were getting in drama fights. You know, then we had to deploy, you know, I forgot to link something to you. This just made me remind you of it. So CCP actually gave out some really cool information yesterday. Fozzie did an early session, at least early for me, on, I think it was on structures, where he gave several charts. And so based on the charts he gave, and I don't think he meant to do this because they always leave the y-axis off, we were able to pull our own internal tickets, our GSOL org was, thanks Tuzzy, and tell me exactly how many citadels were deployed because we figured out one period during the graph spike, you see a very large spike in the graph he shows, that's all goons. We had just announced privatization and rental, or leasing, sorry, of moons within Delve. And over the next few weeks, and I won't give the exact number, we deployed a lot of citadels and we were able to correlate that number and then back into all the other y-axes. So we actually have a ton of great information from CCP that probably only we can decipher because we're the only ones with a static number represented in that chart.
Oh, wild. And didn't you do a census too? So you got the goon census?
Yeah. So we hadn't done one, I think, since 2014. We do this for various reasons, but the primary reason is to judge our economic health of our membership. This is another lesson from DEC. The interesting thing about DEC that we learned at the end, and I've said this before, it's not so much about when your alliance goes broke. It's about when your people do. So even though the alliance had ISK left at the end for like SRP and things like that, our membership so badly wanted to go and make money so they could pay for Plex for their accounts or whatever, that there was this outcry, like, we just need space now. We want to go make money. Like, we don't want to fight a guerrilla warfare, even if the alliance is able to do it. We want to go have fun somewhere. So it's like, okay. So one of the other things we try to make sure is that our people are rich so that they can endure the hard times when they come. And based on what the census is saying, we are fabulously rich. like it's middle class in Goon Swarm is, you know, 100 bill. Like it's just retarded.
All right. But I understand the point. And that is that everybody can afford to fly. They're all feeling wealthy. They're all feeling pretty good. So again, I go back to, in that census, was there anything surprising in it?
Yeah, I would say the number of percentage of people that run at least three accounts was a little surprising to me, based on the numbers that we had seen from CCP, you know, which was a much lower ratio. So we're more than double the average on accounts per person, which is nice. Nice to see that economic health. People are a little richer than I thought they would. And then the spread was about what we thought on ISK generation. So there was no surprises on the activities they do to generate the risk. That wasn't a surprise, but I would say the accounts and the overall wealth was a little bit.
Hmm.
And that I was the only one that checkboxed 10 trillion plus. I was kind of hoping there was another guy out there. Minute would be able to check 5 trillion plus for sure, based on all the Moon Goo prices now, because we are just manipulating the living shit out of that. But I think, you know, we got many, many trillionaires I weren't aware of. So that's good.
Hmm. So what do you guys fear, if anything?
Maybe CCP, maybe. I mean, that's really our only adversary anymore. There's no one that's going to come to Delve. Like, that's not a reasonable thing to ask somebody to put in, you know, a year of labor against Delve. It doesn't matter that CCP changed the timers to be 24 hours. Like, that isn't relevant. What's relevant is how much ISK are you going to have to lose to dislodge us from Delve? And that number is very high trillions, like at a minimum. And no one else has that ISK right now to kind of throw at this. Like, would you throw that at Delve to bash your head against, lose tons of ISK and make us move? Or would you rather do that across the rest of the galaxy and maybe get something for your money? So we didn't have to die from an internal strife, which is always a possibility, and you've got to guard against that. Mm-hmm. Or some kind of nerf that makes us quit the game and CCP basically kills Eve by, you know, killing our playstyle. Like that would be our biggest fear, that CCP kills Eve. Because we want Eve to be here 10 years from now. Like, I would love to be playing Eve in my retirement someday. I don't know how reasonable that is, but I would like that to be true.
When you have more time?
Well, when I have more time and I can sit here and develop more relationships in the game, potentially. Like, it is fun to teach. I used to teach for years on end when I worked from home more. I used to teach in our GSH Averager all the financial things you could want to learn, like how to manipulate, what spec to do, how ARB is done, like all the super tricks, you know, how to, you know, identify other traders, how to run them out, like all these things we used to teach. And that was kind of enjoyable, but I don't have as much time for it anymore. So I would like to, you know, have time to do that again someday, maybe if Eve's still around and there's still a player base that's interested in the economic meta anyway, which is big ifs.
Well, I think that's kind of the mark of the veteran players and stuff that find this game so interesting, they want to pass it on. It's kind of like a legacy thing.
That, and it's lonely. Like I've said this before, like, yes, we are basically the unassailable cabal. No one is playing the economic game at our level. It's not even close, but it's also very lonely. Like, we don't have anyone to talk to or bounce strategy off of. We haven't had a new member in like 6 years, I think. Like, That's not a good thing, because even we will die, you know, just of people leaving the game over time. And then once critical mass, which we barely have now, is lost, then you're just alone and you're the only guy playing a type of playstyle at a level. You're just going to quit because what's the point, right? You got to have an adversary that's like, it's like going and playing TF2 and playing casual. Yeah, I like to do it from time to time and stomp on pubbies, but you know, you're just stomping on like paste eaters, right? It's not fun. It's not competitive.
Wait, what is TF2?
Team Fortress 2? God, Team Fortress, I hate you.
So, ProBank, you're also, you know, why are you doing the bank thing?
Two reasons I gave earlier. First off, I'm not going to have time for Eve. I don't want to spend time in Eve investing. I want to outsource that if possible. Second off, the thing I'd give about the futures market, that would be some really nice infrastructure to have for a financial community in Eve for the future, especially when I come back to the game. If I can get the ball rolling, if other people start the ball rolling as well, it's going to be something really great to have. But that's a big if, you know?
Yeah.
Dude, just invest in Goo. That shit is going so much higher. Fuck 600 billion on, like, single digit interest loans. Like, screw that. Like, just put it in like R64s and 16s and 32s and you're good to go.
Are you driving those up? I thought I heard something that escaped.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, shit, I wrote an article about it and rubbed everyone's face in it twice now. So yeah. Like, I think I wrote the original article when Neo and Tholium were like 50K, and I'm like, buy Neo and then later Tholium. Well, Neo is like the highest R64 now, like in the 120s. So you'd have already well more than doubled your risk in what, 60 days, maybe? And it's going higher? Like, I don't know how much more crayon I could write, but I've done all I can.
That's the interesting thing, too, is it's not just that you're exerting like muscle up north to disrupt other people's economies, but then you're really choking out JITA by not letting anybody export your materials out there, right?
Well, it's more I'm absorbing all of JITA and not allowing other buyers to actually have inputs. So sort, if you're a guy that's having to source all his inputs in JITA right now, you are totally screwed. You are not going to be able to react profitably or be competitive. It's just the markets are frothy. I manipulate them effectively at will. If you don't know what phase we're in the market, you may just try to buy and get screwed. Like, we manipulate, we crush output prices because we don't want anyone else to be able to profitably produce. So if you're not paying attention, like our internal channels where I say, okay, avoid this area for now, I'm going to be over there, and then go make this stuff for now, it'll be really good. And, oh, make this right now because I'm going to pop that output or the input prices in 2 weeks, like right as your stuff comes out. If you have that sort of instruction, you just print ISK, and our people are making tons and tons of ISK right now. But if you're just Joe Pubby, who's trying to buy some stuff in JITA, send it out to Null and send it back, that is scary as hell, and you're not going to be in that market. And we've been seeing that for quite some time. So it's error denial, economic disruption. It's tons of profit for us, and we watched the Alliance stockpiles go up trillions and trillions of ISK. So the Alliance had only sold like 0.001% of its initial holdings. The Alliance, so think about the stockpiles that are left. So we still have stockpiles from here, probably past Christmas, I would guess, especially in Tholium. But the other R64s like Dis and Prom, we're getting low. We're getting down to like, 30 million units, that kind of thing, where you're like, okay, our pool, which is our demand, is going to have to hit JITA eventually because we can't supply it in Delve. And that's when things are going to get even really crazy because we're going to have to buy that shit too. We don't have stockpiles that can last forever.
Let me write that down. What are you guys going to need in the future so I can start?
Yeah, like I can tell you right now, R64s are going higher. It's just a question of how quick, how fast, and how long this takes because we haven't hit demand destruction yet. Like eventually we're going to hit demand destruction. I don't know where that price is. It could be it's nowhere near where we're at because we haven't hardly seen any. But is it 400 million hacks? I don't know. Is it 500 million hacks? I don't know. But we're nowhere close. And with that variable, those variables, so you got supply and demand for, the goo plus the outputs. But you have another variable, which is capital investment in the structures and, to get the moons tower. Because even in Dell, we have a lot of good moons that aren't towered yet, right? Mm-hmm. And then the fourth variable, which is where does the baseline effort threshold land? We believe it's in the R16s. We believe it's probably high R16s where we won't have enough R16s coming in still. But this had to have been a very intentional thing on CCP's part. We knew within days of the patch, like I tweeted out like some stuff like, oh my God, we knew. We saw in the data that there was a shortfall. So we immediately went to work converting our outputs. And so as soon as all the prices rose, that is when we started cashing out. I think I built like 30 million Ferrogel before I sold a single unit. Which took me forever. And same thing in Fermonics, same thing in Nanos. Like we have these massive output stockpiles, but the prices have rose even with all those stockpiles because we've been slowly bleeding. So we're racing a price rise, demand destruction, how quickly people can put more miners up, and then how much are they willing to mine those miners and how many moons eventually get towered. Like all of those variables are forming this great maelstrom of economic manipulation, spec, and just general fun.
All right, so Eric, go ahead. I've got a question for you. Where is the demand coming from for our T2 goods? Because, I don't actually fly ships, but I'm curious. You mentioned armored hacks, basically. Does anyone fly hacks nowadays?
Yeah, like it's the doctrine we're using in the North. That's the main doctrine, Zishtar.
Okay, cool.
So is this affecting more like, because I imagine the NCPL, the test. These guys kind of take care of themselves, Brave even, having their own moons and stuff like that. Is this really just affecting the people that don't have you know, good moon harvesting?
No, it's going to affect everyone. Like, we're affecting all of Eve. Like, you see this in the prices. Like, it's not like people in test are going to be paying $200 million for an Eagle. And we're already hearing that people up in GOTG are bitching about the Eagle prices they're being charged because they just get completely raped by the price, right? So this is affecting all of Eve. And that's essentially the only place that I'll function is galaxy-wide kind of economic manipulation behavior. Like, I'm not going to waste time on something smaller. So, yeah, like, this is having a very large effect. It's going to continue to have an effect. It's going to grow. My guess is we start seeing, like, 400 million hacks by the end of the year. And it can be significantly faster, but we're purposely trying to churn the whole way up because you make more ISK, you know, reacting and cashing out, reacting, cashing out. You make far more ISK doing that than if you were just to hit it to 200K and sit. Like, that's not very effective. You want to churn that, compounding interest, right? Rule of 72 kind of shit. So we're trying to do this methodically, but I kind of flipped the script about 3 weeks ago, and I just did three consecutive weeks of massive hits where I'm just punching the market with hundreds of billion ISK each week just to kind of see what would happen, and it didn't fall. So, I mean, you get a little bit of, you know, price drop just because I'm not punching it, and people are waiting to see what I'll do. But then you write an article, you panic the pubbies, you make them think, oh, maybe it's going to crash and I can buy in. And then I put my orders up so it doesn't crash. So they're paused in fear while I gobble. And then by the time the market's recognizes, oh, God, it's still going up, then they're screwed. So there's a lot of layers to this.
That sounds like a band's name, doesn't it? Panic the Pubbies.
Oh, we love panicking the pubbies. And we'll panic them for two. Sometimes we'll panic them just to get them put ISK in. But usually it's to panic them to make them stay away just for a little longer.
So, Probag, when you listen to Aerith, does all that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense. I'm looking at the market right now. I think I see one of his spikes. I don't know.
One? Shit, that's all of it. Like, fucking R16s, R64s is me, baby.
Because I have to admit, at a certain point, it goes beyond what I can understand. But it's neat to see that, you know, you guys can play at that kind
of level. Here's how you look. Here's how you know when Aerith has thoroughly fucked the market up. This is something I teach. This isn't, like, super secret. You go into an item. You look at the price history. If you see a bunch of fours like graffitied all over the fucking market history, that's me. Like, I'm the only one that does it to such a degree. And you'll see me in Ferrogil and Fermis and Prom and Dis and Neo and Tholium. Like, you will see me all over the place. And you'll just see me like, oh, look, he's coming in at a really cheap price. Hey, wait a minute. That item like doubled in a few weeks and you see him cashing out. What the fuck? Right. Like, it's really easy to recognize if you just go look for me in the price history, because I'm so good. I show off and I tag the market history.
And so you do the, this is funny, you do the 4444 as an allusion to faux.
Yeah.
Which I think, I asked Mitani what that meant, because you guys use that, right?
Yeah, we've been using that since 2006 or 5, maybe.
Yeah. I think that comes from basketball, the 76ers, where...
No, we did it from, somebody did it, it was, the Koreans used to do K-E-K-E-K-E or whatever, something like that. And we had FOFO. Like, we did FOFO, like, way back in when we were in Syndicate, and we've always done it. And so that's our slogan when we've, like, dunked on somebody or we're really happy about something. It's FOFO. So if you look at, like, Ferrogel price history, it's just me going back months. And to get an average or low, like, to spike your tag in a market means you totally dominated it that day.
Got it. Well, I was going to say, just to complete the thought, Moses Malone was saying four, you know, we're going to get the fourth game for this championship. And then that FOFO, every time you look it up on the internet, that's what comes up.
It's, yeah, like ours, it was a little more organic than I think, but yeah.
I like it, yeah. I think when I asked Mitani, he said there was some guy that would charge you recklessly and just typing FOFO.
I remember it was a Raven, I think. He had a Raven. I can never remember his name, but I know who he's talking about. I just can't remember. And he also used to sit behind the gate going to SDSU with a smart bombing Raven with a drag bubble or something. I remember.
I love that stuff. All right. So this, the new content coming out, is that going to favor you guys?
Which one are you referring to? Like the Abyssal?
Yeah. The Abyssal space.
Maybe, I guess to some degree you could argue it does, but I think that it's going to be relatively safe for anyone. Like, I don't think there's going to be mass gangs of like exit point campers. I think they're short enough that catching someone will be a nice event, but I don't think they're going to be that big a deal. I think they're going to be relatively safe.
What do you think of the new content?
Not my cup of tea, but I will say that CCP was very open to feedback we gave on this mechanic. It is substantially better than it was originally presented. Like, it originally presented, there would have been pitchforking for days.
Yeah, there still is a little bit of pitchforking, it sounds like, from the veteran players anyway.
A little bit, but there's at least counter arguments to that pitchforking, right?
Yeah.
You got the PvPers who are like, look, dude, it's 15, 20 minutes, as Fozzie's publicly stated, and you know their exit point. That was not true in the original design at all. In the original design, they were completely safe. Like, there was no way to interfere with them.
Well, we'll see. We're holding off doing a show until the arguments kind of filter down, because there's a lot of reaction at first, and people, you know, their first reaction is not necessarily the correct reaction.
Yeah, like, I we've had more time to digest it. This was really showed to us at the second summit. So I think we've had months to give feedback. They've implemented the majority of that feedback, I believe. So we're comfortable with it. We think there's a good balance between the PvE and the PvP person. You know, I think there'll be hunting opportunities, but I do believe this will be essentially safe.
Yeah. All right. Well, I said I was going to come back to how to destroy goons, and this is what I was thinking. Exploit the culture.
How would you do that? Like, I couldn't tell you what our culture is anymore. Like, we are not true goon anymore, that's for sure.
Doesn't it seem to be coming back to that, though? Because, you know, you had the Imperium, but the Imperium is really, it's mostly goons now because of the way the mechanics made everybody become goonswarm. But that's not the culture.
I don't know what you could do with the culture, because you got to remember, like, we're a dictatorship. So anytime anyone even looks like they're a schismatic or anything, we just shoot them.
How about the upper staff? Is there anybody out there that is a weak link?
Probably, but I wouldn't say who they are. Markleton, yeah.
The head of Karma Fleet, okay. Is that why you guys are bribing him by sticking him on the CSM ballot?
I don't want to get too much into that, but I will say that I really hope we get 3 seats this year, because I'd hate for him to cost a nominate spot, you know?
Yeah, a nominate, right. So, yeah, it's you 3 at the top of the ticket. You expect anybody down ballot to make it too?
Like, I think number 4, I think Judge may be able to get on. Like, I think that's a possibility. He does have a lot of name recognition. So I'm not saying it's, you know, 50-50, but I think there's a shot.
Well, what about you have Sullen, but you other ex-CSM, and you also have Commander Aze, who I like.
Yeah, he's just been like the pity ballot entry a few years. I guess he's in goons now, but I mean, he would have to be pretty far down the ballot, because we're going to have a lot of strategic political picks ahead of that for sure.
He's still trying. This is his 5th run, I believe.
Hey, I'm sure he'll keep trying. Like, if he can get enough pub, he's great. Like, but he needs to go to Jita and be like the town crier and actually double people's disc maybe or something.
Well, is there actually a high sec constituency, or is that just...
Sure, Steve gets on, doesn't he?
Yeah, but yeah. It's just Steve. They all vote for Steve.
Yeah, they just like they got Steve.
Yeah. Figured it was third.
I mean,
party.
Do we really need a high sec CSM?
Actually, Aerith is kind of a high sec CSM. It's kind of
I
funny.
Have definitely been advocating for a lot of high sec issues. Like, I definitely am a very strong proponent of revamping Wardex system. Like, I hate how it works. Like, I believe it should only be people that have something in space. Like, you shouldn't be able to just face stomp new people, new corpse to the game, or people who just want to do PvE. Like, you can gank them. You can still interact with them. You don't need to just grief them with Wardex. Like, Wardex is a coward thing, and all the people that are picking on those little corpse are just cowards.
Yeah. Well, again, I think, you know, the only weakness you guys are showing, because game-wise, you guys are in a very strong position. I think everybody knows it. But the one thing that you can't overcome is your past, like this, the goon name. Like, there are still people like me and other people that will just never be goons because, I don't know, because we decided not to like you a long time ago for some reason. The only weakness you guys have is culture, but you guys seem to be maintaining your culture very well, especially with the crackdown on just toxicity and that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, that all helps, you know, have a homogenous organization of our size, but... If those people don't want to join goons, we have to have enemies. We can't do accretion disc on all of Eve. That would be dumb. We'd be sitting here bored and not doing anything. We have to have enemies. So you definitely want a nemesis of some kind, even if they're kind of a paper tiger.
Right. Exactly. That, because, you know, Microsoft needed to support Apple when they were in competition with one another, because Apple was losing a lot of market share. But you need that competition.
Yeah. So protagonist needs an antagonist.
But the alternative is to try to join an elite franchise like, I don't know, franchise is the right word, an elite group like NCDOT or PL. And I'm speaking in very generic terms. Other groups that are good too. And NCPL aren't always as good as this, they sound. At least PL doesn't seem that like they're as strong as they were. But people can't join those groups right away. So there's no access to them. So they have to join groups like, I don't know, Guardians of the Galaxy. But those groups are under siege. Or DRF, where there's nothing seems to be going on. Like the alternatives, I guess there's Test, maybe Brave's still around. Just as the alternatives.
Like Test is similar to Oracle. Like I've said this in our leadership. I think Test is the most culturally similar to how we function. So people have that as an option. I guess you could just form your own. But yeah, like there's probably not a lot of options other than goons if you're not elite PvP. I mean, there definitely is this dichotomy of people that don't give a shit, just want to be good at all parts of the game, and then people are just kind of PvP focused. There's definitely a schism in Null, I think, between those two entities right now.
Also, somebody mentioned Origin because Elo Knight is back, and they've always been a good boogeyman, able to take on bigger groups than themselves.
Yeah, but then you got so there's a general rule in EVE. If your organization is defined by a leader, and if the leader's there, you're good, and if the leader's not, you suck, you got a shitty organization. Like, those organizations don't last.
Well, some can make a case CO2 was that kind of
organization. Yeah, Gigax gets headshot, and now it's fucked.
Yeah, well, it seems to be reconstituting. I don't know to what extent.
I don't think that's anything like the real CO2. It's like some sort of zombie, like NC Dot is, like trying to like steal the old NC name, right? It, like they couldn't even come up with their own name. It's kind of like that.
Well, it was a stupid prank that was a play on Northern Coalition, and now they kind of have to live with it. I think there was a movement to change the name a few years back. There's a big vote, and it was really 50-50. But they said, well, 50-50 is not enough to change the name, so we'll just leave it NC Dot.
Right. So you got this shameful name with a dot in it forever.
I know. I don't like it, but other people, I guess, do. Yeah. So anyway, you know, what I was thinking was there should be, because I'm sponsoring, like, I'm not sponsoring, but I'm trying to get myself involved with a group that's doing the Keepstars. We can argue about that in a second. But that to me seems like if you can set up ecosystems in high sec or low sec, it gives people an alternative to the goon civilization.
No, not really. Because there's a lot of, like, it's not like, oh, I put a Keepstar and now I've filled all the prerequisites up. Like, no, there's 20 to 30 things you've got to get right to get a market going, and no one's done it but us. And you could put Keepstars, Ring Around the Rosie all around high sec, and it's not going to work.
Well, it's not to say that a trade hub would exist there, but, you know, just to, like, you know, where a ship sinks and all the fish kind of like hang out because they need to be in closed spaces. They can't be out in the open.
I guess we're talking about bottom feeding catfish. Okay, sure.
Not bottom feeders. We're talking about all the ecosystems that evolve around structures, because you need a feel. I forget what the word is, something tropic. You need to feel like security around you. That I think the Keepstars kind of fit the bill for at least low sec and that kind of stuff. Because I think
only if they can use it. Like, it's not about the Keepstars staying tethered. It's how do they use the space around it? The Keepstar doesn't help them use the space.
No, it doesn't. You're right. I have to work that out.
Yeah, there's some flaws in your plan, man.
Oh, yeah, I know. There's a lot of flaws in the plan. We're trying to figure out if it should be one corporation and try to get it blue to everybody so you don't get killed. And that would just kind of say, okay, everything can be Freeport now because nobody's going to kill these. Or the reality is NRDS kind of stuff, not red, don't shoot, which means like we'll let neutrals exist here and friends, but our enemies won't be allowed. That's that kind of philosophy in EVE, NRDS. If you say, yeah, let's do that, then you always get accused of not being a free port. So the alternative is you create one corporation and try to get diplomatic relations with everybody to be safe. Or you say, you know what, you're all owners, keep it safe the way you want. And we'll just be like a league of owners, kind of like the NBA or the NFL sports leagues.
I'm very against anything where just one large organization comes shit on you at will. Like, that's okay. Like, you're talking about trying to build a little sandcastle that anyone can just come kick over.
Well, that's right.
You're just suffering that they don't. Like, you're just hoping you're not big enough for them to notice. But if you do, then they kick you over. Like, I don't know. It's not a great strategy.
Well, it is. You're at the mercy of, like, everybody has to defend themselves. So the northern ones would say, okay, well, NC will defend these because I have friends that do that. Or if there was southern ones, and there wouldn't be because you wouldn't allow them. But if there were, it would be like, well, these aren't going to get attacked because goons will defend them. So you get the biggest bully in the block to kind of defend them. The problem is when the block shifts, what happens then? Are they considered enemy? You know, it's a very interesting problem to have, actually.
And yeah, I think it's a terrible idea. I wouldn't do it. I mean, if I was going to do something like that, I would try to, if I was those people and not me, I would try to do something probably purely in high sec first.
Right. The last thing is, here's what I think people might want when they play Eve, and that is to stay independent, but still have access to some of the cooler stuff. Because, again, one of the things that people have to sacrifice with you guys is participation. They have to participate, right? And they have to be
not really.
Don't you guys have PAP links and stuff like that?
Yeah, but it's not really to the extent you would think. Like, there's definitely a lot of corps within in the Imperium that probably don't produce much of any PAPs. Like, they have a very minimal amount. But PAPs is such a low bar, a threshold. Like, if you have a pulse and can log in like once every few months, you're fine. Like, if you're literally going on like a 2 or 3 fleet ops a year, you're probably good in PAPs. Like, that's how low the bar is. So if that is the bar, then I don't know what to tell you. You know, you can't meet.
You're not even playing.
Yeah, like I rarely ever undock or undock in anything and not a freighter. And I could probably maintain the PAPs. Not that I have to, because goon swarms are immune, you know, anyone that's in goons. So if you don't want PAPs, you can always join goons proper because we can do what we want.
Oh, I didn't know that. So you guys are immune from that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's funny because you did log in for Burn Jita, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, I created Burn Jita. A lot of people don't know that. So I try to participate in every third one, right? I may not get every year because depending on the weekend it falls on, I might be busy or have family plans. But this one, I knew I had Saturday. Like, I had stuff going on Sunday, but I was like, oh, I can probably participate most of Saturday. Like, before the family's up, I can get a few hours in and that kind of thing. And like then there was like a dance meet. I'm like, sweet, I can play for like 6-7 hours. And so I just got a bunch of faction vindicators, polarized ones, like a dozen of them, and just started ganking in faction battleships because that's what I do because I'm rich.
That's what cracked me up. You're like, I'm not going to get killed in a destroyer.
I'm like, what ships? And they're like, well, if you want to go pimp, go Talos. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? I'm not going to be caught dead in a Talos.
That cracks me up. If I'm going to die, I'm dying in style. I'm dying in
a vindicator. Yeah, I'm like, but your killboard efficiency, I'm like, fuck you. Like, my killboard efficiency went from like 99% to 98% losing 12 faction battleships. Like, who cares?
Yeah, I always say if your efficiency is too high, you're not doing it right. Like, you need about a 70 to 80% efficiency. If you're 90, you're kind of like hiding.
Yeah, I'm like 98 still, and that's with just throwing MISC away.
Yeah. That's interesting. We'll find a way to destroy goons. Just it's going to take some time.
I think it'll end up being CCP killing Eve is probably because let's just say like CCP Concord spawned in Delvin, killed everything they had. We just move. You know what I mean? Like, you can't really stop us from building again.
Well, I think that there's a couple things at work here that we're all have in common. One is that how do you kind of like play this game after you've been playing it a long time in a way that's actually significant still? And legacy and trying to build legacy, I think, is important. And then doing stuff for other people is an important thing.
And writing articles, rub their faces in it. I like that now.
Yeah, well, I guess you could still do that. You're on a like what appears to be a winning team right now. But
I'm on the Patriots back when the Patriots were just unstoppable, or the Cowboys in the 90s. That's the team.
Deflating the balls. Oh, yeah, the Cowboys, yeah. All right. Thanks very much for an interesting perspective on things for you and Aerith and ProBag. Anything you guys want to say before you take off? Is there anything to be said?
Not for me.
I'm Mungu, and no tech idea sucks.
Well, okay. There it is. I want to say that we are hiring a producer for TIS. That's someone to help the shows run, prepare the notes, prep topics, communicate with guests, and stuff like that. If you have that kind of ambition to contribute, please go to Talking In Station's Discord and hit me up on a direct message for information on that. That is Matterall. I'd like to thank the McLeod and for engineering today's show, and Kaskoro, who does the webmastering. If you need to listen to this show or check out the show notes or back episodes, check out talkinginstations.com. And we have just revamped our donation system on Patreon. So we now have a new class of supporter, and that is an angel class. And so we actually got one. So we're doing pretty well on that. Look forward to some changes for TIS that you guys have made possible with contributions. Also look forward to, I'm going to be doing something with these Keepstars, whether Aerith likes it or not, because, you know, I think it's a good alternative.
Well, it'll give us an opportunity to prove that you're not aligned with us later when we kill them.
When you kill them, okay. Make sure somebody else pays for them then. But yeah, so that we'll be talking about that kind of stuff and how to like raise money for doing something in of the public works inside a high sec, low sec, or something like that. Thanks very much for listening in on this week. I hope you had a good time at FanFest, at least watching it. We will see you next time when we talk about FanFest. We will see you then on Talking in Stations.